Hi, and welcome to today's webinar. I'm joined in the studio today by Simon Buckingham. How are you, Simon?
I'm very good, thank you, Brendan.
And for yourself, Lynn, the same. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Brendan.
Excellent. Today's webinar is really about our experiences in New Zealand when we went over there recently to buy property. In the first 5 days of this decade, Lynn, Simon and I submitted multiple offers to buy up to 16 cash flow positive properties, some with additional add value potential, resulting in about $1.5 million worth of property purchase, yielding about 9% return. As we said in December, leading into Christmas, you have a choice about how you use your time over the holiday period. There's a time to kick back and relax. Sure, we encourage you to be with family and to be with friends and reconnect. But there's also a requirement for you to put a line in the sand for you to be ready to go again. We declared ours to be January 1, 2010. Now, with focus, willingness to take action, it is possible in a very short space of time to go from knowing very little about an area to finding and buying multiple great deals. So how did we do that? We actually applied everything that we talked to you about. We adopted the ABMS model, analyze, buy, manage and sell. If you look at the life cycle of a purchase of a property, we applied all of the components that we speak to you about. We use the templates that we tell you to use. And funnily enough, they work. The analyze phase is all about goal setting. It's all about getting your finance in order, getting strategy right and defining the area and becoming an area expert. Now, I'm going to go over this very, very briefly, but we applied ourselves to the ABMS model in getting ready to go to New Zealand. We looked at our goals, and it was really to buy property profitably to enhance and build our own portfolio. We looked at finance. Simon, you specifically spent some time on finance over there. What did we have to figure out to have you feel comfortable to go and buy?
Well, as with any property transaction anywhere, whether it's New Zealand or over here in Australia, you need to know how much you can actually afford to buy. You need to have some sort of indication. So to figure that out, I booked an appointment ahead of time with a bank manager over there. And actually on the very first day we arrived in the country, so before New Year's, we actually went to go and see them. And I sat in his office and we talked about what we were planning to do, what we were planning to buy, the types of properties, looked at financial position, and we got a pre-approval. So I walked out of that, caught up with Lynn, and basically we said, let's go shopping.
And that was a great subject line for an email I received from you back in Australia.
Indeed. And we had a formal pre-approval. I believe the words that the bank manager said was, okay, well, I'm going to commit the bank right now to a certain amount of dollars.
Having established then what we want to do as goals and having now established that we do have the finance and the funding to make it happen, we applied ourselves to the strategy and we thought about what it is we actually wanted to buy. And we came to the conclusion that the properties we were looking after were cash flow positive with an add value potential if possible. That was our primary objective. The question then became, well, where do we go to find these in New Zealand? Now, with limited time available, pre-planning was very important. Lynn actually did some research on New Zealand's North Island and found some centres she wanted to concentrate on. Lynn, what did you look for and how did you go about finding it?
Bearing in mind what the economy was doing, New Zealand economy hasn't been doing so well. It's been hit hard by the GFC and a drought. New Zealand's also been in recession for a little while, and we actually saw evidence of that as we were driving around. We saw commercial property struggling, we saw vacancies. We decided that it would be important to have a look at what the property trends and the property market was doing as a whole. So needed to do some major research. Now, this didn't take all that long, but it did take some time and some focus to sit down, got online. One of the things that Simon and I already do is we're on a mailing list for one of the major property valuers in New Zealand. Now, they're called Quotable Value, QV, similar to RP Data, in that the services and the reports that they offer are very, very similar. So we were able to monitor some of those reports on median house price movements around the different areas of the country.
So tell me, what did that all reveal for you?
Well, it revealed that some of the major cities appeared to be recovering. So they seemed to be sort of property price, median house prices were back where they were almost a year ago. Very encouraging. However, it showed that the values in some of the major regional centres were still a little soft. So we saw that as potential opportunities. We saw that the property cycle was beginning to trend upwards. Very encouraging also.
What you've seen and what you evidenced in your research was that there was a ripple effect around major cities are doing great stuff and they're starting to come out of the negative and the recession in New Zealand, mm-hmm. but it hadn't yet hit the major regionals.
Mm.
And it therefore hadn't either hit the towns outside of those major regions either.
Mm. And you would see something similar in most Western countries. Here in Australia, for example, the cities were first to come back and the regions tend to lag coming out of the bottom of a property cycle.
So with that in mind, we focused on towns with population size of 10,000 people or more.
Now, would you class that regional or would you class that as a smaller town?
This is New Zealand you're talking about.
Well, Wellington's a lot like Ballarat, isn't it?
Nice.
High rise Ballarat, yeah. We looked for property prices that were in the lower region, looking for specifically 2 to 3 bedroom property houses under the 150K price bracket, also with reasonable rent demand in the town. Also, there needed to be stable industry. There needed to be stable employment.
So no good going in and trying to invest in a town where everyone's just been laid off.
No.
And you might find that there's a bit of an exodus going on there for a lot of vacancy as a result of that.
Which has happened due to the GFC, as I say, that some of the commercial properties not doing so great and some of the larger industries having closed down. Not great for some areas.
So then what did you do?
So then I decided to have a look at some of the actual listing on the internet.
So you started from a macro country perspective, you then got into the cities within the country and then the regional towns and the trends within that. Now you're drilling down to particular areas.
Yep. It was a case of going online. We did a search by price and found that some centres did come up with properties that met the search criteria, which is great. Then it came down to looking at what was already being rented and what those rental properties were actually renting for on a per week basis.
Where did you find that information?
Well, some of the properties listed already had that information, as in they were already tenanted, so it was good to already have that information in the little marketing blurb. But also on realestate.co.nz, there's also the for rent. You can click on and do a search there, so you can just go in there and put, you know, the area, the criteria that you're looking for, how many bedrooms, carport, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and those stats will come up too.
Did you do anything to verify those details?
Yeah, I decided to phone a few agents and ask about some of the properties that I'd seen online and found that there were quite a few opportunities there. That led me to make a decision that, okay, let's put an X on the map, we'll go there. And that's as scientific as it got. Okay, do the background checks, property prices, rental incomes, let's go.
There is a pattern here, and it's not rocket science. Start from a macro perspective, drill down into the broader areas so you get a sense of property and what's happening more likely. Drill down then into more refined areas again, research down to house level, and then go and prove the work that you've done by speaking to agents. And it works, and it worked brilliantly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So from there, I just went, okay, we need to make some arrangements to meet over the Christmas period, which, you know, a problem in itself was the statutory holidays. So I needed to know that there was an agent that I could contact and meet with to be able to view any potential properties over the Christmas New Year break. And we actually found that there were many agents that were quite willing to meet us on the Sunday, the Saturday, the Sunday, on the statutories. It wasn't a problem. So we made arrangements and booked in appointments. I also asked them to make me a list of all of the properties that met my criteria that I was asking for. And then it was just a case of, you know, once we got to New Zealand, we hit the ground, we met with them, time to go shopping. Let's go view some properties.
Now, you did this for New Zealand. Is this process restricted to New Zealand only?
No, not at all. This could be any regional centre in Australia, any regional centre anywhere. If you apply the same kind of research, the background check, anyone can do it.
We then all jumped on a plane independently, but we got to New Zealand and we all jumped in this same little Corolla.
let's just paint a picture for people here. You've got to picture this tiny little white Toyota Corolla, or Cool Roller as we called it, hatchback. Brendan with his long legs jammed into the front seat. And then, of course, Lynn and myself and two kiddie seats in the back. So it's a bit of a squish. But, you know, you got to make sacrifices to get success in your investing, and this was one of them, being cooped up in this tiny little car for a week.
I got to say, I do need to applaud you guys for being able to sit squashed between two kiddie seats in a very confined space for long hours. It was an extraordinary response. I don't know that I could have done it. All right, so we landed, and we hit a town. Now, we had about 4 to 5 days to actually make some purchases, if we were going to make any at all. And we had 4 towns or so to visit. We had about 24 hours to become area experts. Now, that's not a lot. So how did we do it? The towns were small. We basically had to get to know the pockets within the town. Now, how do you find that information out, and what happens in those pockets? We spoke to multiple agents, we looked at multiple lists, we had multiple conversations with many people, and we drove the streets many times. Were we always knowing where we were driving? No, there are times we got lost. But that's not so bad either, because that allows you to explore the town. You get to areas you otherwise didn't intend to, and you might find opportunities there. But we basically figured out a system very quickly. In a town, there are plus-plus areas. They're the areas that people really want to live and the most expensive houses. You've got a plus area that's an area that is coming up, and it's like you're above-average type of area. You've got your neutral, which is not really going anywhere very fast, and it's just a standard staple environment. Then you've got your minus, which is not really an exciting part of town to live in, but it's a stepping stone to somewhere potentially. And then you've got your minus-minus, which is, please, just don't go there. And if you're going to go there, keep your kids in the car. Now, we managed to find plus-pluses right through to minus-minus areas. And we made a decision that we were really going to look for cash flow positive properties of minus-type houses in plus-type areas. Again, it's another version of Steve's model of ABCD, if you like. But we found the pluses and the minus far more depictive around an immediate indication of pockets. Now, basically, I'd got a local map from the information centre and said, excuse me, you live in this area, yeah? Where would you really, really, really like to live living in this area if you had to move? And she would point out the plus-plus areas. And I'd say, that being the case then, where would you really not want to live? I mean, just don't go there. She goes, oh, you don't want to go down. And we circled an area of streets that were the minus-minus areas. And through a conversation with real estate agents and the information centre, we were able to get very quickly pockets within the town that gave us a price range and a rental range. So we'd cross-reference that with the information that we knew and with the information that came with the real estate agents. In 24 hours, we knew the different pockets. We knew the plus from the minus and the plus-plus from the minus-minus areas.
It doesn't take a lot to pick a minus-minus area, does it, Brendan?
No, really? It doesn't. We had this classic example. There's a town, lovely town, but there was one street that was maybe, 200 metres long, really, or 100 metres long. It was a really short street. But the houses in there were really scary either side. Simon didn't want to get out.
I wouldn't get out of the car. I let Lynn and Brendan do the walking.
And we went into a little house which would have been no bigger than a standard two-car garage. And a group of people there that you'd be scared to walk up to in a dark alley at night. It's just not a house or an area that we wanted to invest in. I mean, that was an example, of course. But within the 24 hours, we also determined price ranges in each pocket and the rental rates for each pocket. And what we found is that you could buy something for $70,000 to $75,000, maybe $80,000 with a $160,000 to $180,000 return, or with a $130,000, $140,000 return. So there seemed to be some lack of correlation between price and rental return. Well, that made our job very easy. You would just pick the low prices with the high returns and go, excellent. But unto itself, that's not enough. And Simon, we had to do some number crunching.
That's right. You've got to understand both the numbers in the deal and the risks that you're entering into. So, for example, that street that Brendan referred to with the little house that was all a little bit scary once we'd been through it, that was a low price and quite a high rental, but looking around the street, you could just see a huge risk in terms of future issues with vacancy, issues with property values, issues with maintenance and damage over time. So that was an issue of staying away. But when it comes to the ones that are in, you know, the minus or the plus areas that aren't so bad, then you've got to come back to your numbers and make sure that you're going to get the right sort of return to justify a purchase. As mentioned, we were looking for properties that would generate a positive cash flow with the possibility to add value or some good growth potential. So starting with the cash flow, when you number crunch cash flows, let's just revisit what you need to do there for a start. Your cash flow is determined by the annual rent less the annual expenses for the property. That gives you your annual cash flow. Now, rent's obvious, but the annual expenses include your interest costs on any borrowing, the property management fees that will get taken out of the rent, because presumably, and in our case, managing these remotely, we're not going to manage them ourselves. Council rates would be one of the more significant annual expenses. Insurance is another one. You need your property as insured, otherwise you won't get finance, and what if the worst happens? And depending on the condition of the property, you'll need to allow some amount for maintenance over time as well. So you take your annual rent, you subtract those annual expenses, and that gives you your indicated annual cash flow. Now, it's pretty easy to get a good grip on the expenses in a very short space of time. A lot of the information will be part of the advertising or listing of the property, or the agent will be able to give it to you straight away. In our case, we saw typical council rates on most of the properties we looked at of around about $1,750. It was very easy to find that information. And rental fees were generally around about the 10% mark. So with that in mind, insurance on these properties, easy to find out. Again, we were looking at about $500 insurance premiums. So we were able to put all that together. And where did we put that information? Well, we used the results number crunching templates for each potential deal. And remember, the templates that are available to you in results are exactly the same ones that we use. We haven't got any other secret magical tool that's just for us. Those number crunching templates are our templates. Now, on top of the cash flows, having looked at what the cash flow or the annual cash flow expected from a property was, we also looked at value add potential on top of that. So a small positive cash flow on its own wouldn't necessarily justify purchasing a property, because what if interest rates go up, or what if you have some vacancy at some point? How do you offset some of that risk and still get a good return from your property? So we looked for subdivision potential in particular. That was relatively easy for us to assess in a very short space of time. We could look for subdivision precedents in an area. We could talk to agents about other similar properties in the street or the area that had been subdivided recently, or just see them as we were driving around. So we looked for subdivision potential, and we made some inquiries around the selling prices for vacant land in the area as well.
Now, we restricted our add value to subdivision potential. Why would that be?
Main reason would be time, and also ability to manage the value add project remotely. It's a lot harder to coordinate multiple trades for something like a renovation if you're doing it at a distance than it is to, say, liaise with a surveyor or a town planning consultant to help facilitate a subdivision.
Exactly, and you don't necessarily want to get into construction of new homes over there either, given the market that we were looking at would be a significant overcapitalisation to put a nice new home on it.
Oh, sure. Price ceilings in a lot of the areas that we'd look at simply wouldn't justify construction of a new home. Now, so that was one aspect of it. So we looked at that, and could we chop off a piece of the land either right away or somewhere down the track to make the deal even more appealing? We also looked at growth prospects. Now, you'll recall Lynn's comments earlier in the webinar about doing research, and that research showing that major cities were returning to growth while the regional areas were soft or flat. And given the way that property cycles move, our view on that was that we were seeing the market bottoming out in the regional areas. Now, they might still be flat for a while, but there was evidence that any softening in price was slowing down, and that in many areas it was actually returning to a little bit of growth.
In fact, we actually had a comment made by one of the real estate agents.
Yeah, we did. It was interesting to hear that we were amongst the first, if not the first, investors looking back in some of these towns at investment properties in this sort of price bracket. So, you know, there is a certain first mover advantage if you can see the trends that are happening in an area and trying to anticipate what's coming next.
Did that make us pioneers?
No, and there's a bit of science around all of this that you can apply, and it's a model that we were using on this trip. Now, it'll be a webinar in and of itself to go through this in detail, but very briefly, the science you can apply is all around rental yields or gross rental returns. Now, from a maths point of view, Brennan, that's just taking the annual rent and dividing it by the value or the price of a property to get a percentage. Now, you can use an understanding of the rental yields to get some level of confidence about what may happen with future growth for these properties. So, for example, if you know that in normal times the average rental return or rental yield is, say, 5% for one of the rental properties in this area, and you're looking at a property that's not falling down around your ears, that's in reasonable condition, if not the prettiest property in the world, but you can buy that at, say, a 9% yield, then you can have some level of confidence that when the market is less soft and returns to a more normal or even a better time from the point of view of growth, that you're going to be able to put that property back into the market at or perhaps a little bit above normal rental yields. And if you understand a little bit about algebra and equations, what that means is that the value of the property is going to be significantly higher. So you take a 9% yielding property today, in a more stable time, put it back into the market at, say, a 6% yield, still quite attractive potentially to investors. That 3% difference in the yield translates to tens of thousands of dollars in value of the property.
Now, the guesswork here, and if you could call it that, is all about the timing around them when that would occur. There is a kind of economic certainty that it will occur because history dictates that that's an average.
But when?
But when? Now, is there a science we've been able to apply to that?
Well, as we've said earlier in the webinar, we've actually seen the major centres starting to return to growth. So that gives you a little bit of a leading indicator, but the lag could be a year, 2 years, 3 years, who knows. The good thing about these sorts of deals, though, is that they are what, Brendan?
Cash flow positive.
Indeed they are. So assuming that there's a certain amount of buffer in your positive cash flow to absorb what might happen to interest rates over time, you can actually afford to buy these things, have them pay themselves for the meantime while you wait for that to occur. And if you've got a degree of certainty that it will occur and it's just a matter of timing, but this thing's costing you nothing to hold in the meantime,
what does it matter?
Yeah, who cares?
If you've got the additional spice of being able to subdivide it and maybe sell off a block of land, you're in a far, far better position than having to buy and hold a negatively geared one and hope and pray that it goes up.
Mm. So we don't invest on emotion, but there'd be a certain amount of excitement when you start to see the boxes getting ticked in this way. And indeed, they were for a number of the deals that we looked at. So on balance, what we were looking for, or what we were asking, was whether the combination of cash flow, value add potential, e.g. subdivision, and market driven growth potential, given where we were in the property cycle, whether that combination was enough to justify a purchase, or turning that around, at what purchase price would it be enough? So we let our numbers dictate our offers. So we brought everything back to the templates. We ran our numbers. We looked at the value-add opportunities and the growth opportunities for the areas we were looking at. And we ran the numbers and we said, okay, what is the minimum return we'll accept for this property, given our assessment of the risks and the cash flows and the potential? And we let that determine how much we were prepared to pay.
Now, you will notice if you listen to this that this is nothing new. There is no new science in this. We are telling you to do exactly what we've done in the first few days of this year. It works. It's worked for us. We've proven it again. It's applicable and works for you too. Just make it happen.
That's right. Now, coming back briefly to the offers then. So we went in and we, you know, we had a very short space of time and we were looking at multiple properties. So we went in and put down offers at a price that we'd accept with conditions to allow us to verify some of the risk in the deal, so subject to building inspections. If the property wasn't currently rented, we made it subject to a independent rental appraisal to our satisfaction. And that then enabled us to submit multiple offers without feeling like we were necessarily committing ourselves to every single one of them, and gave us the ability to do a bit of pick and choose as the responses to those offers came back. And it became easier with each successive deal. After the first couple of deals we'd reviewed and we'd set up our templates and we'd entered the numbers around rates and insurance and everything else, we found ourselves really only changing a couple of figures in the templates as we looked at each new property, and one of those was the purchase price was obviously different from one deal to the next, and the weekly rentals. The rest of it we found in many of these towns stayed relatively constant. Rental property management fees were fairly constant. The rates didn't seem to vary a lot either.
We basically made those decisions on the bonnet of the car.
Yeah.
It's a case of talking to the real estate agent and them saying, so how does it appeal? Well, it doesn't work because this, this and this, or great, we'll offer you this.
Yeah. So, you know, you can make decisions very, very quickly on this. And if you feel like you've got uncertainties or risk exposures, well, that's what conditions in your offer are for. There was one property that we actually made a cash unconditional offer on. We walked into a real estate agent's office in one town and we had a chat to them about what was on the market at the moment. Hadn't really planned to buy anything there, but as it happened, us being there on the ground in front of the agent, an offer on a property had just fallen over on finance. The previous offer was $80,000. The rental appraisal on this property was $160 per week. So those who remember the old 11-second solution might be able to do some quick maths in their head and add 1 plus 1 equals positive cash flow.
And what's the current interest rate over there?
Current interest rate's sitting around 5.89%.
So that's quite a positive yield.
Mm. So that immediately caught our interest. Now, the great thing about this particular property was that there was already a building inspection report on it, which the agent quietly passed our way, and we were able to look over that on the spot. And there was already a written independent rental appraisal on the property as well. It was currently owner-occupied. So we were able to look at that. So we looked at that, did some quick numbers, and went, you know what, this one isn't too hard. Let's just take it. And we put in a cash unconditional offer, and in about 30 days from now, that property will be ours.
Mm, indeed. And with a nice, positive cash flow.
Yep, no-brainer.
If we boil this right back down to the basics, in essence, the path was this. Lynn did some macro due diligence on New Zealand relative to the economy, relative to the stability of income of townships. Now, Lynn, how long did this take?
Literally a few hours.
And it cost you?
A couple of international phone calls, not a great deal.
We then jumped on the plane, flew over, cost of flights were whatever the cost of flights were, accommodation, car rental, add that in. We drove around for 4 days. We placed 16 offers for cash flow positive properties in 4 different towns. These properties earn between 9 to 10% gross yield, subdivision in potential in 3 of them that will yield us potentially $60,000 back to us within 6 months. Total cost to buy the properties, if we were to land them all, would have been $300,000. Total portfolio value, $1.5 million. If they all settle, and if we'd purchased them all, and we held these properties for 10 years and did nothing but basic repairs, based upon conservative growth, where prices double every 10 years in rent and in values, in 10 years you'd need to sell 4 of them to pay out all the remaining loans. The result would be you would have 12 properties earning you a debt-free income of $200,000 per annum. So basically, a couple of weeks of groundwork, 4 days on the road, $310,000 in equity, and the patience to let it sit while you kept working for 10 years, and you'd be able to retire on $200,000. I mean, in 4 days, we basically purchased enough property for one person to retire in 10 years' time, for the rest of their lives. Now, you can do this. If you've got a week that you can spend on research, you've got 4 days you can fly over there for. If you've got the ability to draw down on your equity to $310,000, which we covered by cash flow positive properties anyway, and the patience to stick at work for another 10 years, you could retire on about $200,000 a year. Now that's nice. Guys, I want to thank you very much for listening to what has been a very exciting start for our year and for our next decade. I hope your Christmas and your new year has been equivalently exciting for you. If there's anything we can do to support you, please don't hesitate to give us a call, 03-8892-3888 in Melbourne. Take care, be well, and until next time,
get out there and take action.
Lovely. See you guys.